Hello, this is Beatrice Pavia with part one of the pantograph of Friday, March 7th, 2025. We begin with page one, which has a beautiful photograph on the front page with the headline, Mural, a Symbol and Beacon for All, Alums Heartland Artwork, a Celebration of Diversity. And the photograph shows the artist standing in front of a wildly colorful mural that she has created. This story is datelined Normal. A new campus mural highlighting the different cultural backgrounds of students is now on display at Heartland Community College. Heartland alumna and graphic design employee Amari Akins unveiled the mural last month inside the Staczynski Family Multicultural Lounge at the Workforce Development Center building on campus. Akins, who first started going to Heartland as a dual credit student, said she spent countless hours speaking with students and community members through focus groups to make sure the story of the Multicultural Lounge was theirs. The Multicultural Lounge mural is really a dedication to diversity, said Akins, who earned her Associate of Arts in Communication from Heartland in 2021, before going on to complete her bachelor's degree in graphic design at Illinois State University in 2023. It is an opportunity to connect with other cultures, connect with yourself, and learn about the world around you. Akins said her favorite part of the mural was, of course, the illustration, but also the storytelling aspect, as she worked to bring together a cohesive image and narrative with different identities, cultures, and ethnicities, all in one art installation that will be displayed for years. Over the course of her research, Akins said she was thinking of ways to put these ideas together and came across Pandout, which is believed to be the world's largest tree, located in Sevier County, Utah, in the Fish Lake National Forest. The quaking aspen tree is a clone that originated from a single seed and spread over 106 acres, consisting of more than 40,000 individual trees. In total, the tree is estimated to weigh nearly 13 million pounds, according to the U.S. Forest Service. The age of the clone and its root system is difficult to calculate, but it is estimated to have started at the end of the last ice age. The whole forest sprouted from one seed, and I thought that was really amazing for narrative purposes, Akins said. It communicates this idea that we can have our unique individual backgrounds or different cultures, but at our roots, we are all the same. The mural itself incorporates more than 30 different cultures, represented through digital illustrations that were later wrapped onto the wall as wallpaper, Akins said. Some of the cultural elements pictured in Akins' mural include Luften, the German practice of opening every window in a home to air out a space, improve air quality, and promote well-being. Coqui, a species of frog native to Puerto Rico, named after its distinctive coqui sound. And Virolata Caramelo, which roughly translates to caramel trash can tipper in Portuguese and is a type of mixed breed dog commonly seen on the streets of Brazil. Sarah Tipton, director of student engagement at Heartland, said the inclusion of the mural and other cultural artifacts have really brought the multicultural lounge together and represents the college's commitment to listening to student needs. If you know the story of how the multicultural lounge and mural came to be, it shows that we do listen to the students, Tipton said. It came from the students, and it is beyond what I would imagine for a community college of our size to provide our students. Tipton said the Multicultural Lounge is truly special to the campus because it involves student input on every step of the way, including those from the Student Government Association, as well as student organizations like the Black Student Union, Pride, Association of Latin American Students, and Global Student Union. I really want the mural to be a symbol and a beacon for underrepresented groups and for diversity, letting people know that they can be themselves and let their unique idiosyncrasies shine in a communal space like this, Aiken said. And our next story is about the U.S. economy, headlined, Trump Pausing Tariffs, Some Mexico and Canada Levies Delayed a Month Amid Trade War Fears. This is an Associated Press story, datelined Washington. President Donald Trump on Thursday postponed 25% tariffs on many imports from Mexico and some imports from Canada for a month amid widespread fears of the economic fallout from a broader trade war. The White House says its tariffs are about stopping the smuggling of fentanyl. The taxes proposed by Trump have caused a gaping wound in the decades-old North American trade partnership, and Canada quickly took aggressive countermeasures. Trump has also said that the tariffs could be resolved by fixing the trade deficit, and he emphasized while speaking in the Oval Office that he still plans to impose reciprocal tariffs starting on April 2nd. Most of the tariffs go on April the 2nd, Trump said before signing the orders, and then we have some temporary ones and small ones, relatively small, although it is a lot of money having to do with Mexico and Canada. Trump said he was not looking to extend the exemption on the 25% tariff for autos for another month. Imports from Mexico that comply with the 2020 USMCA trade pact would be excluded from the 25% tariffs for a month, according to the orders signed by Trump. Canada's autos that comply with the trade deal would also avoid the 25% tariffs for a month, while the potash that U.S. farmers import from Canada would be tariffed at 10%. Mexico President Claudia Sheinbaum had planned to announce any retaliatory measures on Sunday, but Trump credited her with making progress on illegal immigration and drug smuggling as a reason for, again, pausing tariffs that were initially supposed to go into full effect in February. "I did this as an act of accommodation and out of respect for President Sheinbaum," Trump said on Truth Social. "Our relationship has been a very good one, and we are working hard together on the border." Major U.S. stock markets briefly bounced off lows after Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick previewed the month-long pauses on CNBC on Thursday. Significant declines already seen this week resumed within an hour. The S&P 500 stock index has fallen below where it was before Trump was elected. Mexico has cracked down on cartels, sent troops to the U.S. border, and delivered 29 top cartel bosses long chased by American authorities to the Trump administration in a span of weeks. At a press conference, Sheinbaum elaborated on her call with Trump on Thursday, saying that she told the president that Mexico was making great strides in fulfilling his security demands. "I told him we're getting results," Sheinbaum said. But the U.S. imposed the tariffs, so she asked Trump, "How are we going to continue cooperating, collaborating with something that hurts the people of Mexico?" She said the two countries will continue to work together on migration and security and to cut back on fentanyl trafficking to the U.S. From January to February, the amount of fentanyl seized at the border dropped more than 41%, according to Sheinbaum, citing data from U.S. Customs and Border Protection. She cited the dip as meeting a commitment made to Trump. Ontario Premier Doug Ford, the leader of Canada's most populous province, said that starting Monday, the province will charge 25% more for electricity shipped to 1.5 million Americans in response to Trump's tariff plan. Ontario provides electricity to Minnesota, New York, and Michigan. "This whole thing with President Trump is a mess," Ford said Thursday. "This reprieve, we've went down this road before. He still threatens the tariffs on April 2nd. Ford's office said that the tariff would remain in place even if there is a one-month reprieve from the Americans. Ford has said that so long as the threat of tariffs continue, Ontario's position will not change. Lutnick said that he will be watching fentanyl overdose deaths in the U.S. as a key metric. that he will focus on when evaluating Canada and Mexico's efforts to combat the synthetic opioid. In his speech to a joint session of Congress Tuesday night, Trump portrayed tariffs, which he has also levied on China at 20% due to their role in fentanyl production, as a source of increasing wealth and power for the United States. Yet most economists expect the import duties to send prices higher, slow the economy, and potentially cost jobs. The Yale University Budget Lab has estimated that the tariffs on Canada, China, and Mexico would increase inflation by a full percentage point, cut growth by half a percentage point, and cost the average household about $1,600 in disposable income. Trump appeared to acknowledge Tuesday night that there could be some pain. "There will be a little disturbance, but we're okay with that. It won't be much," he said. And our next front page story is about public safety, headlined, "Police Shooting Deemed Justified. State Police Wounded Armed Man in Lexington, Ruling Based on Video." This story is datelined Lexington. The McLean County State's Attorney has determined Illinois State Police officers were justified when they fired on an Arkansas man outside a Lexington gas station last month, injuring the man. State's Attorney Erica Reynolds confirmed her office's decision Thursday morning after state police released footage of the incident that was recorded on body-worn and dash cameras. The footage shows 18-year-old Ryan Aaron Stanley Hurst point a firearm at Illinois State Police officers shortly after the vehicle had stopped at a gas station on P.J. Keller Highway around 10:30 a.m. Thursday, February 6th. In the video, state police then appeared to exchange gunfire with him, striking Hurst. No officers were injured. According to a statement from the Illinois State Police, the agency's Division of Internal Investigation is continuing its investigation into the shooting, submitting all evidence to the McLean County State's Attorney's Office for further review. State police said officers were alerted around 9:35 a.m. that day to a vehicle on Interstate 74 in Champaign County that was believed to be involved in an armed robbery in Texas. Illinois State Police tracked the vehicle as it headed north into McLean County, and around 10:30 a.m. it stopped at a gas station in Lexington, state police said. A 19-year-old man from Texas exited the vehicle and went into the gas station. When he came outside, he complied with officers' commands and was taken into custody for further investigation. He was not injured during the incident. The Pantograph is not naming this suspect, as he was not charged in McLean County for this incident. After Hurst appeared to be injured, officers ordered him to show his hands, according to the video. "We're going to get you help. You got to get your hands up," one officer told Hurst, which was heard on the video recorded on his body-worn camera. "Get out of the car and we'll get you help. We cannot do that till you get out. We see that you don't have your gun anymore." Hurst told officers his arm was broken and police called for an ambulance with their firearm still pointed toward him. Another officer then told Hurst to roll out of the vehicle on your belly so they could help him. About 7 minutes after the gunfire ceased, officers approached the car, removed Hurst, and placed him in handcuffs, his arms behind his back, as he yelled that his arm was in pain. Officers attempted to render first aid until Hurst was transported to the hospital. He has since been detained in the McLean County Jail. Hurst is charged with the following: 3 counts of attempted first-degree murder, Class X felonies, 4 counts of aggravated discharge of a firearm, 3 of which are charged as Class X felonies, while 1 is charged as a Class 1 felony, 1 count of aggravated assault, a Class 4 felony. According to a probable cause statement read by First Assistant State's Attorney Brad Rigdon in court on February 24th, while 2 officers began to apprehend the second suspect, Hurst stood up, holding a black firearm in his right hand and raising the gun in a shooting stance toward an officer. Rigdon said the officer fired 3 bullets at the defendant before Hurst took cover within the suspect vehicle. He then fired back at all three officers through the front and back windows of the car. All three officers also fired shots at Hurst. Investigators located six spent 9mm shell casings, which Illinois State Police forensics confirmed to be fired by Hurst's handgun, Rigdon said. On February 7th, Hurst spoke with investigators while he was still in the hospital and told them he had left Texas a week prior without a plan. Hurst said when officers approached him at the gas station, he tried to aim past the trooper's arm while firing at him. He told investigators he had hoped the troopers would kill him, Rigdon said. Judge J. Brian Goldrick ordered Hurst to be detained on the grounds of dangerousness and willful flight. Hurst is scheduled for an arraignment on 9 a.m. on March 14th. And our last front page story is about the state of Illinois, headlined, Advocates Say Medicaid Cuts Are Devastating. This story is Dateline Springfield. Ever since she was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer in 2018, the community care program has been a lifeline for Diana Inman. The program helps older adults who might otherwise need to move into a nursing home to remain in their homes by providing in-home and community-based services. The 75-year-old Decatur resident receives the services through Medicaid, the nation's health insurance program for more than 70 million people with low incomes and disabilities. I have an active caseworker who regularly checks up on me, and I have received regular cancer treatments at least every 3 months, Inman said. I have a dedicated home health aide to help me 3 times a week for the household chores. Cuts to Medicaid would be disastrous for people like her, she said. Speaking from personal experience, if I were to lose my health coverage through Medicaid, I would probably be forced to sell my home just to cover a year's worth of my medical expenses, Inman said. And then where would I be? Inman was one of several Medicaid recipients, hospital executives, insurance industry officials, and mental and behavioral health advocates who testified before an Illinois House Budget Committee hearing on Wednesday about the significant impacts that would be felt across Illinois if the program were cut. One by one, they painted a picture of a healthcare ecosystem that would essentially collapse, with up to 770,000 Illinois residents at immediate risk of losing their coverage, safety net hospitals in rural and urban areas on the brink of closure, and critical services being cut. The hospital community is deeply concerned with the size and scope of these proposed Medicaid cuts and their impact on access to health care services across the state of Illinois, said A.J. Wilhelmy, the president of the Illinois Health and Hospital Association. The two-hour hearing was just over a week after U.S. House Republicans approved a budget framework that calls for more than $4.5 trillion in tax breaks that would disproportionately benefit the wealthiest Americans and $2 trillion in spending cuts largely to social programs. The resolution directs the House Energy and Environment Committee to come up with $880 billion in cuts over the next decade to programs that it oversees, which include Medicaid. While it does not specifically call for cuts to Medicaid, several state legislators said it is likely, next to impossible, to achieve the level of cuts outlined without touching that program. More than 3.4 million Illinois residents receive health care through Medicaid, including 772,000 covered under expansion through the Affordable Care Act. Lizzie Whitehorn, the director of the Illinois Department of Health and Family Services, the agency overseeing the state's Medicaid program, told lawmakers the state received more than $20 billion from the federal government in 2024 for Medicaid, accounting for about 62% of the program's costs. Of that, about $7 billion is for expansion, which has a higher 90% federal cost share. Illinois has a trigger law that would automatically end coverage if it dips below that percentage. Whitehorn said Illinois would likely lose between $24 and $39 billion in federal funding over 10 years, under one scenario being considered by federal lawmakers. I want to emphasize that every proposal Congress is considering to cut Medicaid costs will result in health care coverage losses in Illinois, Whitehorn said. Democratic lawmakers who dominate the state legislature acknowledge there is very little they can directly do to affect federal Medicaid funding, but the potential for deep cuts has created significant uncertainty as they seek to craft a state budget this spring. Medicaid spending accounts for about 35% of the state's all-funds budget and about 17% of its general fund budget. They used the hearing as a clarion call to Illinois' three congressional Republicans, urging them to protect the program from the deep cuts they say will hurt their constituents. The Republicans Illinois sends to Congress have the power to do something about it, said State Representative Robin Gable, Democrat of Evanston. As mentioned, Darren LaHood, Mike Boast, and Mary Miller need to see their State House colleagues speaking plainly and honestly about how the Trump agenda affects their communities. Because if they stand up for their communities, they can stop the most destructive plans denying health care for everyday Americans in our country, she said. According to state data, more than 196,000 of Boast's constituents, nearly 181,000 of Miller's constituents, and more than 139,000 of LaHood's constituents are Medicaid recipients. All three voted for the budget resolution, which was procedural and not the final package. Spokespeople for Boast, LaHood, and Miller did not immediately return requests for comment. State Representative Bill Howder, Republican of Morton, a medical doctor, acknowledged the cuts would be devastating if they take place, but he called the hearing performative in nature. He also said Democrats were ignoring the existing problems with the program, such as low reimbursement rates. I look at this program and I've already seen the cuts, Howder said, and so this, I think, is performative. We don't know what will happen. There's a lot of things that we have no control over, and I think we were here today as a performative exercise to say Trump is bad and we're going to lose the Medicaid system. But Democrats took exception to that characterization. I just want to say to you, in earnest, this is not performative, said State Representative Lindsay LaPointe, Democrat of Chicago. We are trying to raise the alarm to the three congressional GOP members here in Illinois. We cannot take for granted that they know about the $21 billion that the feds send to Illinois every year for Medicaid. So we are performing, I guess, for that audience, so they make sure that we can continue to have access to Medicaid in Illinois and in other states, she said, referring to the Illinois GOP members of Congress. Inman, the 75-year-old cancer patient, said the uncertainty is weighing heavily on her and her family. Choices made by lawmakers in Washington have put the future of Medicaid in jeopardy, and as a result, lives are on the line, she said. And we turn now to some local and state news. This story is headlined, Farmhouse Child Care to Open in Fall, Dateline Bloomington. The Farmhouse Early Learning and Development Center, a new child care facility planned in Bloomington, will host a groundbreaking ceremony at 10:15 a.m. Saturday at 1609 North Hershey Road. The 10,000-square-foot facility at the corner of Hershey and General Electric Roads will feature 7 classrooms, a gross motor room, a natural outdoor play area, and a 1,500-square-foot clinic space for early intervention specialists, according to a news release. The facility plans to open its doors this fall and begin enrollment in midsummer, pending final licensing from the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services, the news release said. Leading the farmhouse will be Molly Robinson, who has over 22 years of experience in early childhood education and felt there was a growing need for child care in the area, according to the news release. Robinson previously had a home-based child care program called Molly's Munchkins, and when the waitlist reached 45 families, She and her husband, Barry, decided to look into other ways they could help bridge the child care gap. Ivy Rehab for Kids will be operating a satellite clinic within the farmhouse to provide therapy services for children whose families want private, individualized services or have aged out at age 3 of state-funded early intervention, the news release said. Families interested in keeping up with the farmhouse can follow the Farmhouse Early Learning and Development Center page on Facebook. And for information on employment opportunities, you can email Molly Robinson at thefarmhouseeldc.com. Excuse me, thefarmhouseeeldc.com. And this news brief is headlined Transgender Visibility Day, March 31st at ISU. Dateline, Normal. A queer affinity group for faculty, staff, and graduate students at Illinois State University is organizing a promenade on the Redbird campus at the end of this month for Transgender Day of Visibility. In a statement provided to the Pantograph, Bree Byers, co-president of ISU's Queer Coalition, said this year's Transgender Day of Visibility sachet will take place 4 p.m. Monday, March 31st. After meeting at 4 p.m. in the Rosa Parks room in Waterson Towers, Byers said they will promenade around the quad and central campus area in service of transgender visibility and allyship. Doors will open at 3 p.m. Byers said they invite participants to wear highly visible and colorful clothing and to bring hand signs if they wish. After the sachet, Byers said they will share remarks and discuss community building in the Rosa Parks room. And work to impact West College Avenue. Partial closures along West College Avenue in Normal will begin on Friday, March 7th for road construction, weather permitting. The closure will result in the following impacts through the summer. Eastbound traffic will be maintained throughout the project limits. Westbound lanes will be closed from the White Oak Road to the easternmost Rivian entrance, Gatehouse 4, and there will be no westbound access from Wiley Drive. Local access to business entrances will be maintained throughout the project. Drivers are urged to use caution when traveling through the area. And Lollapalooza 2025 dates are set. Dateline Chicago. Lollapalooza just dropped the highly anticipated 2025 festival dates on social media. The four-day event is set to run from July 31st to August 3rd. The announcement post was captioned, "See you this summer, Chicago." Lollapalooza is an annual American music festival that started in 1991 and is held in Grant Park in Chicago. The event features epic performances across 8 stages and more than 170 bands from around the world, all set against the backdrop of Lake Michigan. Festival goers can also enjoy food, drinks, and sweets from some of the Windy City's favorite restaurants. Chapel Roan didn't just dominate Lollapalooza last year, she made music festival history. The Midwest Princess amassed the largest daytime crowd in Lollapalooza history, a spokesperson told Block Club. Headliners also included SZA, Tyler, The Creator, and Blink-182. Brittany LaRue, a representative with Lala, said attendance for the iconic music festival last year was 110,000 for each of the 4 days. And the lineup for this year is set to be announced later this month, with tickets currently unavailable to purchase. To be the first to know about when tickets will be available to buy and updates, visit lollapalooza.com/tickets to sign up for alerts, either by text or email. And this has been Beatrice Pavia with part one of the Pantograph of Friday, March 7th, 2025. I look forward to reading part two with you next.